Attention Magazine, making a difference for people affected by ADHD. Check out the August issue, where we'll cover back-to-school tips and strategies, college and alternative schools for your child with ADHD, apps and assistive technology, pros and cons, and lifelong education. Attention Magazine is chad.org. Click, join, get involved. Download the Attention Magazine app on iTunes.
This is Attention Talk Radio, your ADHD information station, part of Attention Talk Network. Its sister stations include Attention Talk Video, your ADHD talk show station, our subscription-based newsletter, Attention Talk News, your ADHD news source. Each media channel can be accessed at their respective URLs, attentiontalkradio.com, attentiontalkvideo.com, and attentiontalknews.com. Keep up with all the media channels on our Facebook page, found at facebook.com/attentiontalkradio.
Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to attention, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, ADHD and Attention Coach Jeff Copper. And man, do we have a great show for you tonight. Our topic is how a stroke taught me to pause, helping my ADHD. And with us in our virtual studio is Wes Gray. A big shout out tonight to Rodrigo in Brazil, because it takes a world to put this show on. This show actually kind of came about from a loyal listener of ours down in Brazil who's been spreading the word and advocating on behalf of those with ADHD for many, many years. So Rodrigo, you know who you are, and thank you so much. Real quick, tonight is Wednesday, August the 12th in the year 2015 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Real quick, some announcements. The CHAD conference is coming up, and it's coming up fast. If you haven't been to a conference, you need to check it out. By the way, CHAD stands for Children and Adults with Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, and CHAD is the largest non-for-profit organization that advocates on behalf of those with ADHD in the world. The conference this year is November the 12th through the 14th. It's in New Orleans, Louisiana. I'm going to be there, as I have been for the last several years, and actually presenting a fun little topic on boredom. So if you get the chance to go, please swing by. I'd love to meet you, particularly if you're a fan. To learn more about the CHAD conference, go to chadd.org. Also, as Dr. Barkley has asked me, as a personal favor, which I'm thrilled to do, to promote the ADHDfund.com, which is a crowdsourcing website that's used to raise funds for small-scale research studies worldwide. And I think that's all of our announcements tonight, so let's get into tonight's show. Real quickly, Wes Gray is a digital artist. He has previously worked in the video game industry and is currently directing a documentary about ADHD after being diagnosed with ADHD in 2013. In the 1990s, he appeared on several UK television shows as a member of the world's first internet band. You can find him on Twitter, RUADD, and on the web at RUADD.com. And with that, Wes, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Jeff. Love your blues intro, by the way.
It's funny. People either love it or hate it. I've had a couple comments. I think the majority of them like it, but every once in a while, actually, I won't get into that a little bit, but thank you for the compliment there. Everybody, this is kind of a fascinating show, because I think it was probably 3 or 4 years ago that I was actually watching somebody sent me a link to a TED Talk, and there was a woman, Jill Taylor. If you just go on YouTube and you go TED and stroke, it'll come up to the top. And Jill is a mental health professional that studies the brain, and I won't go into a lot of detail, but she actually witnessed a stroke while she was having it and described that experience in amazing detail. And through the grapevine, Rodrigo had reached out to me, and I had a conversation with Wes about his upcoming documentary film, which we're going to talk about a little bit, but he had described to me that he was diagnosed with ADHD a couple years ago, and then he had a stroke subsequent to that. And we got into this fascinating conversation about what he had learned through that. And so, Wes, can you just tell us a little bit, really briefly, and we'll come back to it, about when you got diagnosed, and then tell us about just the stroke, how it happened, and we'll talk about that experience for a little bit.
Yeah, well, like you said, it was a couple of years ago. I was diagnosed just before I had the stroke. I was working as a 3D modeler at basically made shoes for children, orthopedic shoes. And I just did it virtually, and then somebody else actually made them. But that job is most of my jobs, and a lot of people with ADHD will relate to this. There was already so many problems. I had been there about 2 years, and I do stupid things like, I shouldn't say stupid, but it's typical ADD. I log in to work, every day for a year and a half, and then randomly forget to log in, which irritated my boss to no end. And I remember telling him, I had just started suspecting I might have ADHD. I was reading some books about it, and I told him that, and he'll remain nameless because he probably didn't know much about ADD, but he basically laughed it off like, oh, you're not ADD type or something, you're not the type. And I thought, oh, you don't know me very well. But so that kind of led me more to research more about ADHD. But I finally got around to going to a mental health professional and getting, diagnosed. And it was kind of funny because he went through all the, typical questions about it. And I had told him, before this about pretty much my life story and how did poorly in school with grades and things like that, except in creative classes, creative writing, art, music, et cetera, did really well, but I did terrible in, math and all the other subjects like that. And he said, well, Wes, you aced this test. You get like flying 4.0, on the scale, I'm pretty typical. I guess I'm pretty far to the right of the spectrum.
So and it's funny because you said that your boss had said you're not that type, and I'm trying to remember where I heard this, but somebody I was recently talking to, they said when you label something, you no longer pay attention to it. You tend to generalize it, and I underline that because I've coached individuals that were like tax accountants before, and I mean, which is amazingly detail oriented, factual type thing. They didn't have trouble, and I've coached people on the other side of the spectrum that were like really kind of all over the place. So when you categorize that you're that type or not, really ADHD runs the spectrum. And one of our most frequently referred to show was a show that we did back in 2010, I think, with Dan Pruitt. Back in the DSM-4 days, he did all the mathematical calculation of all the combination of symptoms that you could have in order to have ADHD, and there was over 18,000 different possible combinations. As we were just a little tongue-in-cheek, like, so which version do you have of that? And it didn't take into its severity or comorbid conditions. So you got the diagnosis. So now tell us about your stroke experience.
Okay, and so not too long after finding that out, which actually, like some people say, it's kind of a relief in a while to finally know what you're struggling with. It's not an unknown problem anymore. And for me, at least, I know some people don't have a, they're not exactly joyful when they're diagnosed with that. But for me, it actually was kind of a relief, a big one, actually. And now to the stroke, I was working a night shift and I had a computer all night, so I didn't really notice anything there, not a real physical job. And then I was somewhere, I think, on a day off or before work. So I was at my son's house just, looking at his new internet-connected TV or something like that. Uh-huh. And I just started getting dizzy, and I'm like, what the heck, And then in a typical... for a lot of ADD people, I procrastinated going to the doctor, though, because I was okay it passed, the dizziness. Went home and I had another one, and I thought, okay, this is kind of weird. I never had two dizzy spells in a row like that. Mm-hmm. And but I ignored it again, went to bed that night, and woke up the next morning, and I was just, I thought I was super tired. This is so weird because, you know, it's all your brain. It's nothing physical, you know, from what I understand about stroke.
Uh-huh.
It's actually the damage to the nerve cells, I mean, the
yep.
brain cells, and not your physical body, you know. But it feels like your physical body is what's the problem. And I woke up and I thought, what did I do yesterday? I'm so tired, you know. I've felt like I weighed 500, like I was on, you know, some planet where the gravity was intense or something, because it was like I weighed 500 pounds and I could barely drag myself out of bed. But I didn't think stroke. I really didn't even. I had not gone to a doctor for a blood pressure test in probably my whole life up to that point.
Wow.
Which was another mistake. And so I had no idea my blood pressure was so high until I went. So I finally, after walking around like, you know, jello, and my wife noticed my speech was a little slurred. And so finally it got worse where I started my right side that couldn't move very well at all. So we better go to the emergency room, you know, something's going on here. So I'm figuring out by now it's a stroke, you know, go online,
yep.
look it up and everything.
Yep.
Scare you to death, I don't recommend.
Yep.
On like WebMD, you know, don't go there.
Yep.
Sorry, WebMD, but basically almost gave me a heart attack reading what they had to say about it. But anyway, went to the hospital. The nurse's eyes just looked like saucers when she took my blood pressure. And they immediately stuck me in a wheelchair and wheeled me into
wow.
the ER. And my blood pressure was about
yep.
200 and something over like 190 something. It was that.
Wow. Wow.
So they were worried I was going to expire pretty quickly.
Yep.
I actually ended up thinking, you know, this will be 3 days in the hospital and they'll send me home with blood pressure meds. Well, no, it turned out to be a month in the hospital. They not get my blood pressure under control until a final mixture of certain blood pressure medicine. The last thing they tried after about a month finally
yep.
worked.
And oh, yeah. A stroke's not a drive-by. It's not like fast food restaurant or like even like a heart thing where you go and get an angioplasty, you're in and out, and a couple days later you're up kind of back running around doing it. So, Wes, I want to run to a break real quick. We come back. I want to kind of pick up about your experience about after the stroke and the rehab and really kind of talking about the notion of kind of pausing. But before we go, everybody, Wes is working on a documentary on ADHD. I believe you already got some footage of Dr. Hollowell. Is that correct?
Yeah, we've interviewed Dr. Hollowell and Dr. Amen, and we are going to be interviewing Dr. Barkley this year.
Excellent, excellent.
So, really great.
And so, everybody, if you're listening to this right now, go to RUADD.com, and I think you can sign up and get on your mail list, and they'll let you know what's kind of going on. If you're listening to this in archives, go check it out because the documentary might already be out for all we know. So with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
The average annual cost of attending college starts around $25,000. Students who have ADHD are at high risk of dropping out because they haven't learned the critical skills they need to succeed in school. Protect your investment with an EDGE Foundation coach, specifically trained to help students with ADHD and executive function impairment make the transition from high school to college. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
If you think you understand attention so well, then why are you struggling so much with it? Attention is as simple as it is complex to understand. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. It's grossly misunderstood. Consider this. Focus on the wrong thing, get the wrong solution. In our new ebook, we'll share 5 key tips and insights on managing ADHD learned from conducting more than 300 interviews with attention experts. Download our ebook today at AttentionTalkNetwork.com and start understanding and managing your attention today.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. We're here with Wes Gray, who's got a very unique story. He's an individual that has struggled his life. He got diagnosed with ADHD shortly before he actually had a stroke. And so often in this show, we've talked about ADD and the power of the pause. We've talked about metacognition. We've talked about meditation. We've talked about awareness. We've talked about contemplation. And all those things. Actually, we did an interview with Dr. Barclay several years ago about what he called the six thinking tools that you have. And at the end of the day, it's really about your ability to self-regulate in your mind and kind of pause and use your executive functioning brain to override your automatic brain to kind of actually think about what you're doing. And before the break, we were kind of teeing this up with Wes. And in preparing for this interview, we had a short conversation, and one of the things that kind of struck me is after the stroke, Wes, you had described how you could see a glass of orange juice, and you had to figure out some way to actually get that orange juice up in order to drink it, and you kind of talked about how effortful that was. Can you just talk about your experience in rehab and maybe kind of describe that experience when you're seeing something, and effortfully, you have to figure out how to do that?
Yeah, it was interesting because, you know, you're doing things that are just automatic, subconscious, like, you know, walking and reaching out for something. All of a sudden was, you know, impossible on my right side, at least, and I'm right-handed, so that was quite a getting used to.
Yep.
And, you know, I think we all do with ADHD, we find workarounds for things. So I kind of liken it to that in a way. You know, it made me think about that often because, you know, more mental than physical. But it's kind of the same thing. I mean, I had to find ways to learn to use my left hand instead of my right. And still, I was, you know, and they were encouraging me in rehab to keep trying to use my right hand so that those neurons would, you know, keep working and try to reroute and find a way to reach out and, you know, make a fist, open your hand, etc. And it's been a year since the stroke. I think I might have misspoken and said it's been 2 years. That was since the diagnosis, but a year since the stroke, a little more than a year. And they say after a year you don't get much movement back, but I have been getting quite a bit, actually, even more in the last 3 months. And it is just, you know, trying to use your arm and or whatever. But you have to really think about it, you know, where before you didn't have to. I think the best example of that is when my wife and I take walks on her days off through a really beautiful park here. And it's through some woods, so there's, you know, roots on the ground. You can trip very easily.
Yep.
And I have to really think about taking a step, and I have to actually consciously say, okay, toe up, move your foot out, take a step. You know, you can't just take a step like, you know, my left foot does it just automatically.
Yep.
So when it comes to the right, you actually think of those, and if I don't, for each step, I end up tripping over something. It's really bizarre. And you'll get lazy. You know, that's kind of hard to do.
Yep.
Keep every step, say, toe up. You know, I was an animator for part of my career, so I actually think of animation when I'm walking.
Uh-huh.
It helps. They call it a walk cycle in animation. That's exactly what I'm visualizing that in my head as I walk, and it actually helps. And, so the answer, it's just you have to think very much before you can do stuff like drinking.
And you said that you're going to be interviewing Dr. Barclay. I've interviewed him multiple times over the years, and I loved how he articulates there's the automatic brain, or the involuntary side, and the executive functioning brain. And the executive functioning is very effortful. It's got to step in and override the automatic. And so often in coaching and even the show, we've talked about the need for people to kind of pause and pay attention to what they're paying attention to. And when you're describing the situation where you're having to walk through this park, you got to pause and you got to pay attention to lifting your foot up and your toe and stuff so that you don't necessarily trip. And it's fascinating to me because we've interviewed lots of experts about neuroplasticity, and the general consensus is without a doubt, is that if you pay attention to things differently over a long period of time, your brain actually rewires itself. It physically changes. And what you're describing to me is basically is you're having to pause and think about what you're doing, and slowly you're getting some movement back on the right side of your body after a stroke, so the neurons are actually rewiring themselves. And I really liked how you described how you're right-handed, because one of the things that I talk about with people that come to me to help them articulate to other people about how effortful it is to think is it's like, imagine going through a day for my listening audience and saying, you need to open the doors, turn lights on, and drink and eat with your less dominant hand. And if you try that, I think you'll be surprised that you have to be on guard all day long thinking about that, because if you don't keep it top of mind, you won't do it. And I like how Dr. Barclay talks about how the executive functioning brain has only got so much fuel in the gas tank. So if you spend all your day trying to remember to grab it with your non-dominant hand, it takes away your energy level to go focus on other things, and it can be really, really quite challenging and very, very distracting. So with what I just described, you have any comments on that?
Yeah, and like you just said, it's also taxing. You know, it'll make you tired. You know, like thinking about it. But you know, it's a good thing to do anyway, of course, because it's like your brain's a muscle that you're exercising, and it can get tiring though. But you just got to keep doing that. At least in my situation, for sure. But Dr. Barclay, I love what he says about that. Yeah, you know, I'm just learning all this stuff this year as I make the documentary. It's kind of like my therapy making the documentary, because I didn't know anything about ADHD until I was diagnosed, and I just started. In fact, it's too bad, because probably 10, 15 years ago, a counselor for my daughter had the family come in, and she made a comment to me. She said, have you ever read Dr. Hollowell's book, Driven to Distraction? And I said, no. And she just left it at that, unfortunately. She was talking to me, though. She already must have seen it in me, or through my daughter's counseling, that I had ADHD. But unfortunately, she thought that was probably enough of a hint for me to pick up. Which, of course, for 20 years, I didn't read the book. And then I read it, and oh, my gosh, I just... Well, that's me. You know, every single case study in that book I was just like, wow, you know. And that's what, books like that, not just him alone, but and Dr. Barclay inspired me to work on the movie, because it's kind of my learning experience at the same time.
Absolutely, absolutely. So would you say that having the stroke and having to be more mindful about what you're doing actually has helped you maybe kind of more self-regulate and manage your ADHD?
I think so. I was thinking about that the other day, and there's one thing, like if I don't take my blood pressure medicine, daily, I can end up back in the hospital. And that was something that I never had to do in my life, something that's, life-threatening if you don't do a habitual thing every day. I've never been a creature habit, in fact, it's very, all of my life has been very hard to make routines, So that's a routine I have every day now, twice, sometimes three times a day, and at different times. And, of course, I have alarms and things like that, and half the time, I think I heard a show you did about alarms, recommend. I think it was with Dr. Barclay, actually, not too long ago, and he said, you should write it down, and you agreed, because tech sometimes fails us. And I was going, amen. Now, that's exactly, I've had my alarms not go off so many times and find out, 6 hours later, you haven't taken your blood pressure medicine. It's bedtime now,
So, absolutely.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. But back to the point, I'm sorry. I have to pause to think about that, in case my alarm doesn't go off. And I think things... pausing with things like that, even have, even though that's not directly related to the stroke, it's kind of a side effect of the stroke that I have to do, have that routine. But everything's like that. Like taking a step, you have to think about, you have to think what I'm going to say before I say it. I think I do pause more before I blurt out, and that's one of my worst ADD traits for me personally. As my wife will tell you,
yep.
I start talking and you can't shut me up, and I know from reading that's pretty common, but my brain has downloaded and dumped on someone
yep.
or off, basically. But I'm actually learning to pause before I do that a little bit.
I've been working on this for years on myself because what you're describing me is these are little attention exercises. When you have to pause and think about lifting your foot or pause and think about did you take that stuff, it's kind of like sports, shooting free throws as a drill to improve that skill. To me, there's certain attention exercises that you do that. And again, I have coached a few people before where I've said, once a day I want you to spend an hour using your less dominant hand because it's a drill, it's an exercise to help you become aware of things so that you can use your executive functioning brain to override the automatic brain. And as you've described, you're having to do that more and more and more and to be very intentional. And as an aside, I was listening to your study about blood pressure medication. I'm on thyroid medication, and you have to take it on an empty stomach. And I'm one of those people who don't eat. I don't eat three meals a day. I just kind of graze throughout the day. So I actually have to set an alarm for like 3 o'clock in the morning to get up and take that medication. And, for a while, if I don't take it, it rocks my world for about 24 hours. And I got to the point in time where I came up with a clever idea. Actually, it was from somebody I coached, is that when I wake up in the middle of the night, I flip the bottle upside down. So the next morning when I go in there, if the bottle's right side up, I know that I missed my alarm. If it's upside down, then I know that I take it. And then I have my blood pressure medication I've taken in the morning. That's when I flip the bottle on the other side. And it's very effortful for me to set those structures in so I can kind of remember it. So we need to run to a break real quick. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about your inspiration and really get some insight on where you're going with your documentary, because I think it's really, really fascinating for our listeners. Check Wes out on Twitter. His handle is @RUADD, and his website is RUADD.com. And with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
The average annual cost of attending college starts around $25,000. Students who have ADHD are at high risk of dropping out because they haven't learned the critical skills they need to succeed in school. Protect your investment with an EDGE Foundation coach, specifically trained to help students with ADHD and executive function impairment make the transition from high school to college. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Focus on the wrong thing? Get the wrong solution. Misunderstand attention, and you'll struggle with it. Get 5 key tips and insights on managing ADHD learned from conducting more than 300 interviews with attention experts. Download the ebook today at attentiontalknetwork.com and start managing your attention today.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. We're here with Wes Gray, having a fascinating story about his experience being diagnosed with ADHD and having a stroke. And we're talking about the power of the pause, which really kind of underlines most of our shows, secondary only to attention, because we like to pay attention to attention. And actually, I'm saying that is when he has to stop and think about what he's doing, he's having to focus his attention. So, Wes, through this whole experience, you've been inspired to actually do a documentary on ADHD. Can you just tell us about that a little bit?
Sure. I started thinking about shortly before the stroke, actually, when I was working, I had been diagnosed and was starting to research, read more books, watched a lot of TED Talks. In fact, I think I saw that when you were talking about, but I don't remember the whole thing. I'll have to go back and watch it, but I remember that was, they're all excellent. I mean, there's so many good TED Talks.
Yep.
And so I was learning through those and through books and videos, and there's such a great community of people that, you know, ADD coaches and AD, you know, I keep calling it ADD, but and ADHD, I, from what I know, that's basically the same thing. I'm more inattentive type, so I don't have the hyperactivity, and I think that's actually why my boss, he thought of it as a more hyper thing, you know, like a lot of people assume, and that's why he said you're not that type or whatever, but yeah, I got interested in it. My son's a videographer for a company, and they do commercials and stuff, and he's been wanting to do films and for a long time. He's just starting really to do projects like this. And so I got with him and said, hey, could you help me with this? And I can use all the help I can get, because, especially with the stroke, and I can't even hold a camera right, you know. So I'm like, I'm going to have to, you know, reach out to some people here. But fortunately, he was all, you know, more than willing to help me with it. And it's been great because, you know, he went with me and we interviewed Dr. Amen last year. And he went with a crew alone too. So I didn't get to meet Dr. Hall, unfortunately, but went to New York, interviewed him, and they're just great people too. The thing I come off impressed with is, you know, we're in good hands because these people really care about people with ADHD. And,
they really do. And you know, what's interesting is I've had I got into Attention Talk Radio because I can't write. It's because my challenge is it's very difficult for me. But I can talk like there's nobody tomorrow. And the education that I've gotten over the last 5 years, interviewing the experts has been phenomenal to me. What's been amazing to me is how accessible they all have been over the years. What's also interesting to me is the amazing progress that's been made in the last 5 years, because I remember back in 2010 talking about neuroplasticity with the concept was kind of new, but now everybody is in total agreement. The fact that ADD is really an executive functioning, not a deficit of attention, everybody's kind of in agreement. It's just, it's amazing to me. I get excited about thinking about where we're going to be in 5 years or 10 years, because it's moving starting so fast, and so much more of the forefront's really making a lot of sense. And I think that the more people like yourself that are doing these documentaries, that are getting out there, that are connecting with the people, is really getting the messages, and over the time educating the crowd, which will destigmatize stuff, which will actually help. And there's that age-old conversation, is ADHD a gift or a curse? And I'm not going to kind of enter that far away, because we did a great interview with Dr. Barkley years ago on that particular topic, but I do think that there's certain situations that because of the ADHD, those people have to stand up and do things a little bit differently, just like your stroke is. It's inspired you to do something that you might not have already actually done had you not had it, and actually manage your ADD. So all that stuff can manifest itself in some very positive ways, and my hat's off to you.
Well, thank you. It's going back to what you were talking about, and I actually came to the conclusion, you know, and some people might disagree with me, but that, because there's a lot of positive aspects, like you were talking about, to ADHD, I believe. But there are, it is still, it's not, you know, a walk in the park either to have it. And so one of the things that has struck me about the stroke versus ADHD is that actually when I look over my whole life, you know, I'm 50, I can't remember how old I am, 55. And 55. And over my entire life, and actually ADHD has been more of a disability than a stroke, you know, with partial paralysis. And people go, what? You know, but maybe because I've had it longer, you know, so more has happened over the years. But as far as, you know, I'm talking untreated ADD as well, because I was not treated all my life for it. And, you know, I was in and out of jobs, all the things you read a lot of people go through. It can be a hard life untreated, for sure. And that's kind of going back to the film. That's why I really am. The film's focused on reaching people that have not been diagnosed, I'm hoping. And I'm hoping people will use it as a tool. Like, I have some relatives that they suspect their son has ADD. He's in denial. He doesn't believe it. You know, he doesn't want to be labeled, you know, which I can, some people not liking the label, but trying to get to people like him, so maybe, you know, they can show him the film, they can show somebody, somebody else can show their, you know, maybe even their clients the film, that are, you know, on the fence about it, and just hopefully bring, because there's like 8 to 10 million estimated people that have undiagnosed ADD, and I believe it. I mean, I meet people all the time, and I tell them, have you ever taken an ADD test? And, you know, that sounds kind of like ADD. Nah, they don't want to believe that. And, you know, I'm not a doctor, so they're not going to take my word, you know, rightly so. But you know, it's just sometimes there's some resistance to being diagnosed, which is kind of sad because it is a treatable, you know, but as a lot of the doctors say, it's very effective. I mean, the treatment's very effective when it is treated. Yeah.
As Dr. Howell was, if you get diagnosed, get a proper diagnosis and treatment, your life can be very, very fulfilling, which is unlike many other conditions that deal with your brain wiring, which is really, really, really kind of positive. And there can be an impact out there, which is really, really good. See, there's one other point that I want to make, but it just evaporated from my memory. One of the things that I've learned is that over the years is just because you can't – let me digress. In Santa Claus or Santa Claus 1 or Santa Claus 2 with Tim – what's his face? There was a scene where this little kid goes, just because you haven't seen $1 million doesn't mean it doesn't exist. And so often – and I think that people – is they have to see it in order to kind of believe it. And anecdotally, I talk to people about ADHD and they say, we know – indirectly, there's this thing that we can't explain. They're calling it dark energy and dark matter. We don't have an instrument that really can see it, but mathematically, if I'm not mistaken, we know that things aren't behaving the way that they're supposed to, so we know that there's something out there. And so just because you can't see it doesn't necessarily mean it doesn't exist, and it always takes me back to an interview that I did with Dr. David Teplin and Rick Green one time. They were in a talk show in Canada one time. I think it was a TV show with radio call-ins, and this one guy started, like, you know, ADD doesn't exist, and da-da-da, and Rick Green, who's a friend of mine, he told me, what do you do? And Dr. David Teplin really smoothly said, that's what I used to think. And then he went into, like, the statistics and stated the situation. And I think that there's a lot of people that are ignorant out there, and I think things like your documentary is not so much for the people that have ADHD, it's to educate people that they don't, so that once they get out there, because at the end of the day, if we can destigmatize it more than anything else, that'll be the single greatest thing that will happen to the ADHD population or the community out there is through these types of education. So I really applaud what you're doing. I applaud the inspiration, and I really want to thank you, Wes, for coming on the show and sharing your story, because we talk so much about the pause, and we talked about neuroplasticity and attention exercises and your experiences, and I think those out there, you're an inspiration to everybody, and what you're doing for the community is great.
Thank you, Jeff. Real quick, I just want to comment, you brought up neuroplasticity a few times, and I actually have I don't know if she's a psychiatrist or psychologist, but she's involved in the mental health field, and she asked me once, do you believe in neuroplasticity? And I basically said, I have to. It's happening as my limbs are able to move.
Yep.
It's not because there was ever anything wrong with my limbs, you know. And now I can move them further than before. So obviously the brain has rerouted those pathways. So, yeah, to me that's a given anymore, that it works and it's true.
It's not without effort, but it's very possible. So, Wes, you're very much an inspiration, so thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you so much, Jeff. Pleasure.
Everybody, check out Wes's website at ruadd.com. Get on his mailing list so that you know when the documentary is coming out. Check it out. As a matter of fact, I think they already have a clip of the Hollowell interview that's out there, so go ahead and check that out. And again, Wes, thank you so much. And everybody, we hope you enjoyed this edition of Attention Talk Radio. Catch us next week for another great edition. Take care.